So, did you have seeing Barry Keoghan fuck a grave on your 2024 bingo card? Because I certainly didn't.
No, it was actually on my 2025 bingo card. So
Oh,
he
wow.
got there
Okay. You're ahead of the
sooner.
curve.
I thought he was working his way up to fucking a grave.
Holy balls. It's a podcast. The podcast. Hosted by Lee Michael and Robbie. Yeah, you know, that's relatively early in his career for that, at least as far as being like a more known actor. Hell of a place to start. Anyway, it's another movie episode, folks.
Well,
Surprise,
there's other things to
surprise,
discuss as well,
surprise.
but you know.
Oh yeah, pedophilia and whatever.
I would say
Alleged pedophilia.
it's less of a movie episode and more of an episode about cringe this week. I'm
Okay,
talking about a lot of
sure.
cringe content, Robbie.
Yes.
Including Donald Trump saying yesterday that the Civil War should have been negotiated. That maybe we.
Was that before or after his legal team put up the idea that maybe the president could have SEAL Team 6 assassinate a political rival if Congress was cool with it?
Yeah, I mean, if it's Ted Cruz, I'm sure they'd be cool with it, you
Yeah.
know?
That's a pretty low bar, I think.
Yeah, that was interesting. The civil rights should have and could have been negotiated, you know, like there's some sort of compromise that could have been made. Oh, that's interesting,
Yep.
Robbie. A compromise. What would the compromise have been?
Interesting.
Huh,
Yeah, what could
maybe
that
some sort of
possibly?
like, you know, some sort of like 3/5, you know, type
Yeah, like
of
something that where you yeah, where you kind of meet in the middle. I don't know what
little
it would
more than the
be.
middle, like, you know, three, not two fourths, like 3/5 would be a good compromise, wouldn't you say?
5/8? No.
Thanks, Donald Trump. Very cool.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about it. Well, we watched independently. We watched a lot of movies over the break. We took a break off from recording to observe Christmas, I guess. I don't
Ramadan, I
know.
don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
Kwanzaa.
Kwanzaa. Yeah, Kwanzaa was nice. How was your Kwanzaa this year?
My Kwanzaa was lovely. I did such Kwanzaa activities
Nice.
that we all know, such as candle
That's
and
Hanukkah, you fuck.
put on f funny. No, there's candles on Kwanzaa.
No,
I remember being when I was like 5 and we talked, I was very confused why Kwanzaa and Hanukkah both had candles.
yeah. I wish we had a cooler sounding name for Christmas than Christmas. I know it's like, you know,
Crib.
G
You know what we do?
Yule.
Do you not remember Lee Michael?
What is it? Oh, right.
Quizmoys.
Yeah. Who was that? Maria Bartiromo or
Camila
Camila
Cabello.
Cabela's?
That's her name.
Is she the heir to the
the Queen
Cabela's
of
empire?
England, Lady Camilla Bowles.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Her Majesty.
Yeah. Would you rather be trapped in a Bass Pro Shop or a Cabela's for the rest of your life?
Well, do you want to try saying Cabela's again before I answer that question, or are
No,
we
I
going to
like to
stick with
call it
that?
Cabela's.
Cabela's. That's how we
Robbie,
say
we
it
should
down
open a
here.
store called Bass Pro Shop.
Yeah, absolutely. Guitar Center, but it's only for bass players. What is the forbidden riff?
For bass players?
Yeah. What would you say is the forbidden riff for bass players?
What's that Muse song with the bass player?
It's gotta be Seven Nation Army.
Yeah, but there's no bass in that song.
I know, it's a pitched down guitar, but like it's
Yeah.
gotta be that, right?
Sure. I mean, it ain't gonna be any AC/DC songs. Just
I
fucking chug
don't
it
even know
along on a
what song you're
G
playing.
for a
Yeah.
couple minutes. Then you gotta, ooh, then you switch
Sure.
to D.
A couple minutes, a couple decades. And hey,
Right.
whatever his name is, has more money than I will ever see in my entire life.
True. Yeah.
For playing G and C and D and A.
You know, a guy recently crashed his car and then fled the scene fully nude and ran into a Bass Pro Shop. And then he climbed up the fake rocks and dove into the Bass
aquarium. I saw that.
Yeah, that's pretty epic.
Naked, I believe. Yeah, completely naked.
Kind of reminded me of Robin Williams at the end of World's Greatest Dad.
It was a very sly reference to everyone's favorite Bobcat Goldthwait movie.
Goldthwait. No, I just picture a guy at the end of his rope and he gets into a like, this is what I picture happening.
Sure.
He crashes.
This, this is your fantasy that you think of every night as you go to sleep, touching yourself.
No, not this one. This is a different one.
Getting jerked off by your wife.
No. Just listen. So he gets in a crash. And then, you know, it's like the slow motion, like, you know, CBS drama type crash where everything's like smoky and slow motion. And he's all like, you know, confused as to what just happened. And then he sees the wreckage and maybe like the corpse of like a small boy, like in the wreckage that he, the wreck that he caused, you know. And then he just, that song starts playing, the like, if I lay here. And then he hears the ambulances approaching and he realizes his fucking life is over because he just like killed a family of four and the mom was pregnant. And so then he's like just kind of sitting there in his car contemplating everything. And then he slowly gets out, and as he starts walking away in slow motion, then he starts to jog, then he starts sprinting, just stripping his clothes while the song is belting behind him. And then he enters Bass Pro Shop and everyone's screaming because there's just a fucking nude man bleeding all over the place in the Bass Pro Shop. And then the song's really picking up. Like, we're getting towards the bridge.
Yeah.
And then he slowly kind of fumbles as he climbs up the rocks, you know, and then stands at the top looking down at all these people that are like, you know, on TikTok live and all this. And he's just looking at everyone. And then as the song is like really at its climax, he just fucking dives in. And then he comes up and the police are there and they take him away and beat the shit out of him in the car. And then, you know, he's back to reality, baby.
Hell yeah. That's a good song choice. I would maybe also potentially throw out Fix You, I think would be good.
Yeah, Fix You would be,
you know, good. It's like he starts running.
Under pressure, like a, you know, like.
Yeah, Under Pressure would be good.
Seven Nation Army? Absolutely. I don't know. Yeah.
Who's to say?
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Saltburn, Robbie. Go ahead.
What did you think of Saltburn, Lee Michael?
Well, let me preface this. So I was sick and I missed work Friday. I watched it Friday. So I'm sitting there with a throbbing headache and just absolutely miserable. And it took me a long time to get through the movie. I kept having to pause. To like go to the restroom or, you know, let the dog in or out or whatever. And took a while. And, you know, I'm watching the movie and I'm like, okay, yeah, it's fine. And then I'm like, okay, I got it. You know, it's a Greek myth. All right. And I thought it was fine.
Yeah, that's about it. That's where I'm at.
I get it. He killed a Minotaur. All right, whatever.
Yeah, cool. Sweet. Wonderful. But even you kind of didn't fully commit to that metaphor either, but sure.
Well, Robbie, that's,
yeah, it's the fine. Maybe
the plot twist is the subtext that he's the Minotaur until he kills the Minotaur. And it's revealed that he's actually, what's his fuck?
That he actually is the Minotaur after all. It's a double bluff.
No, he's not the Minotaur. He's what's the guy that kills the Minotaur?
I don't remember. Okay. I haven't read anything about Greek mythology since I was in like eighth grade. So
yeah, I don't know. I just know there's a Minotaur, and then a guy kills him, and then he takes the kingdom or whatever.
But yeah. It's, if anything, I think this movie's a little disappointing.
You know what's not in Greek mythology, Robbie? Slurping up.
What's that?
Kummy bathwater.
Oh yeah, that was gnarly. That and the whole period fingering scene. Although people really freaked out about a lot of the sex stuff in this movie. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of gross, but it's not like that gross.
There's not that much of it. Okay, so let's, well,
no, I was expecting more based on like a lot of people's reactions. I was expecting a lot more, and there was, really was not that much. It was not that bad. I feel like they didn't commit enough to any one idea to make any of them work particularly well.
In this movie. Yeah, so I have a theory about, well, I guess it's not really a theory. This is just sort of my explanation for this movie, because it's having such a big moment right now.
It is.
In the zeitgeist, the pop culture zeitgeist. And I was trying to kind of figure out, like, what is it about this movie that is so, that it's just such like a, not really, not even a hit, just like, that it's just out there so much, you know, that everyone's talking about it. It was the number one streamed movie on Amazon Prime.
It's had a real moment with streaming for sure.
Yeah, and also just, you know, like I saw an ad. You could buy a candle that's Jacob Elordi bathwater scented, whatever that means.
Oh, Jesus.
And it's just like there's memes and everything, and this is what I think it boils down to, and particularly with Gen Z. And like the younger generations of people. I think that this movie, I think it's two things. I think one, this movie is, it's sort of like this prestige picture that's very mainstream. It's a big studio film. Yet it kind of leans into like, not really art house, but like weird shit, you know, that like,
yeah, that's, I would watch. It's like, yeah, it's like baby's first weird indie movie, kind of. Like
exactly.
It's a very, I think, easy introduction into that.
Yes, I think it's like the gateway film into weird cinema that I think most people watch this and they're like, I didn't know you could do that in a movie.
Yeah,
they've never seen anything like that before. Like slurping up bathwater, that's nothing. Okay, that's fucking, that's kindergarten. That's child's.
Yeah, play. Why don't you go watch Naked Lunch and then get back to me?
or any Greasy Strangler.
Yeah,
you know, any exactly. Fucking yeah, it's not that big of a deal. Like, okay, yeah, there's a penis at the end, who fucking cares, you know? But I think people that normally don't see this kind of movie are watching it and it's kind of blowing their minds. But also I have this theory that we're in this new sort of era where like, for one thing, we're back. Like, the Murder Twink is back, dude.
Oh, yeah. Murder Twink has really kind of been back. I was, Murder Twink, now, let me say, I was way ahead of the curve on that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the Murder Twink is fucking here to stay. I think we're in this weird thing where homoeroticism and like twinkish dudes are being fetishized almost like the opposite of a male gaze. In cinema, you know, we had like Call Me By Your Name, which like really made people horny for that type of thing. Like I remember this is all about cringe. I remember the press junket for that movie where Armie Hammer was like, yeah, we would just like make out for a few hours, you know, just like as bros to like, you know, connect. It's like,
yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
Or you're, you know, or it's something else.
Or you're lying, which is, yeah. Or you're lying.
Or it didn't happen, or you're into dudes, bro, and that's okay. But,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. It's like, yeah.
Favorable for a whole lot of people. Well, not anymore, but at the time.
Like, as straight men, we really had to find our characters, so we had to, like, fucking do a little tonsil hockey to get into the role and, you know, maybe put a finger in each other's ass a little bit.
Yeah, we both took terms bottoming to really find the.
Yeah. Well, you know, you don't want to go method in the fucking, in the fucking queer roles.
maybe you don't.
Yeah. But anyways,
how else am I going to get laid?
Yeah. But yeah, there's this weird thing where it's like, it's not even a female gaze, even though, I mean, Saltburn is directed by a female director, but it's just kind of the opposite of the male gaze that leers on women. And it's like leering on a very specific, well, just a specific type of men, The murder twink.
Yeah.
You know?
The murder twink.
Or just regular twinks, you know, the Chalamet and I guess Barry Keoghan now. What is he, 5 foot apparently. Two? Jesus Christ, like I was something
like that. I think Jacob Elordi is also really, really tall.
Yeah, but he looked up at every single cast member for sure.
Yeah, he did. No, Barry Keoghan has to be like 5'4 max.
Yeah. Yeah. God bless him.
And with a beautiful prosthetic penis.
He claims that just was beautiful. His own penis.
Interesting. I mean, I was wondering that when I was watching it. It's like I couldn't quite tell if it was actually his or a pretty good fake if it was. I mean, it might actually be his dick. I don't know.
You never know. That's the thing. You never know.
Indeed. Right? And you know what? Good for him for committing if it actually was his dick. And he was like, I'm going to dance around in a scene that I was certain while I was watching it just really felt like a reference to Love Actually.
Oh, I'm not familiar. I noticed a lot of references in this movie, but what really... I didn't really pick up on this little detail. I was talking about the movie with a coworker, and she pointed this out. He's dancing around and posing like Greek statues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like...
I didn't notice that either. I just thought the ending was kind of dumb, so I was checked out at that point.
Yeah, no, he's parading through the house that he stole, but...
Yes.
Yeah, I guess he's supposed to be doing these like Greek poses. But why though is the thing. Yeah. That's the thing about this movie is like so much of the frustration is just because like why? Like he has no reason to slurp up cummy bathwater.
Go ahead.
I was just saying it's like, you know, it's one thing to make this abstract film that relies on heavy metaphors and things, but like, that's not a metaphor for anything. That's just like, oh, wouldn't it be weird if we put this in a movie? And that's like, that's fine, but it also, it's kind of a weird tonal thing where it's like, something
this movie has major tonal issues.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. That's like a Greasy Strangler thing, you know, that's not a...
Weird. I mean, yeah, that's a pretty aggressive, this guy's a weird sex freak, and he kind of is, but kind of isn't. Like, you know, I think what they're going for is that they're trying to kind of make it like he both wants to be him and he wants to be with him, and he'll do anything and everything to like make that happen. And I think it's supposed to be about like the corruption of the pursuit of fortune and status and wealth and how that can like corrupt you or something. But to your point, we're not shown any reason why Barry Keoghan would want any of this. So when there's also the twist that I thought was really lame, that he's like Hannibal Lecter serial killer, it's like, what? Why? That doesn't make any sense. And they don't do any groundwork earlier in the movie to try and set up that a twist is going to happen. Like they give you the little montage of, oh, he poisoned the fucking champagne and he did this, and he did that. But typically there should be breadcrumbs earlier in the movie and none of that is there. They just like show us stuff after the fact. Like, I don't understand why he needed to be a serial killer for this general plot to work. Because like the rich family, like, yeah, they're kind of like they're vapid and kind of dumb and they're kind of shitty people, especially the parents, but they're not evil. Like, they're just sort of rich and out of touch. So it's like, why is he killing them? Like, we don't have any reason to want any of these people dead.
Yeah.
Versus, like, I feel like a much better version of this movie would be something along the lines of, you know, Barry Keoghan is very much obsessed with Jacob Elordi and his family, and he wants to be a part of it. And his, like, toxic obsession, like, tears the family apart somehow, and he still gets what he wants, but it's like an at what cost kind of thing would make a lot more sense to me than just being like, oh, he's a fucking serial killer and when's at the end, it's like, oh, okay,
yeah, I don't know. I mean,
what's the point of all that? I don't know. I mean, I'm just fucking spitballing, but I just, sure. I don't think that any, you know, I don't understand. Yeah, it's just why is any of this happening?
Yeah, one of the things that really irked me was the fact that so much of the beginning of the movie is setting up that he's such an outsider at the school, that he's super lower class. His parents are Scum. He gets a call that his dad died, and all of this stuff that leads to him going to Saltburn with Felix, his family, or with Felix to meet his family. And that seems like pretty good motivation to be obsessed with this guy and want his life so badly and want to get in with these people so badly. But then it's revealed in the, like, I don't know.
Second act.
Yeah, like towards the end of the second act, going into the third act, that he's
actually...
It's
kind of hard to say because the third act is so long.
Yeah, well, whatever. But it's revealed that he's actually from an upper middle class family and his parents are perfectly lovely, but it's just still not enough for him, I guess. And it's just like, okay, that's less interesting to me. Like, it could I don't know. It was just kind of weird. And then one thing that really pissed me the fuck off is the fact that when we're introduced to the family, they're all watching Superbad, a film that wouldn't come out for another fucking year and a half. Like, if you're going to set a movie in 2006 for no fucking reason. That's a very specific year.
Yeah. It's also weird to, like, not have, like, I don't know. And maybe, like, the housing crisis was more of an American thing than, like, a global thing necessarily. Yeah. But I don't know. Like, it's like using that time period specifically and having it center on this wealthy family, I agree. It's very, you'd think it would play more or play into things more than it does.
Yeah, I guess it's. Maybe it's just to have the right amount of time pass so that at the end where we are in, you know, this year, all the events have happened in the correct amount of time. But yeah, it was still pretty random. I mean, you can just have it set a couple of years into our future and it's not going
to. Yeah, or you don't even need to really commit to a specific time period, honestly.
Yeah, so I just didn't understand the years why. Don't matter. But the fact that you go out of your way to set this in the most fucking randomly specific year. And then the first time we're introduced to these people, they're watching a movie that hasn't even fucking come out yet. And I'm just like, why? Why would you do that? A lot of shit came out in 2006. You could have had them watching any one of those movies.
Yeah. Yeah, for real.
And then, they watched two movies in the movie. And I feel like the second one hadn't come out yet either, but I can't remember what it was. Doesn't matter. Just little things like that kind of piss me off. But yeah, overall it's fine. It definitely doesn't live up to the hype. And like I said, I think a lot of it is sort of just like it got swept up into this weird pop culture moment with a specific generation and like a demographic outside of what the demographic for this movie is or should be.
Yeah. Well, and Jacob Elordi in particular, coming from the HBO show that I don't watch, the one with the teenagers that do drugs and fuck.
Whatever. Oh, who cares? Euphoria?
Euphoria, yes, okay. That's the one. Yeah, he's in that.
Oh, okay.
And I think is, you know, so he's very well known with the Gen Zers from that. And I think he's also big on like TikTok or something. I'm not totally sure. But in any case, like, he had a pretty sizable following before this movie from that group of people. So it makes sense that they followed him into this movie and are like, whoa, like I didn't know cinema could do that. Which, I mean,
whoa.
Which, you know, I mean, I guess ultimately if it introduces people to movies that aren't Marvel or something, then
yeah,
cool.
No, that's fine.
It's not bad per se, but I don't know, I would be totally fine having not watched it.
Yeah, it's not that it's a bad film by any means. It's beautifully shot,
especially once they actually get to Saltburn, it's quite pretty. I think there's some weird stuff earlier in the movie with, like, especially the and this gets to like the tonal inconsistencies. The like montage of them getting to know each other that really felt like it came from some, I mean, kind of like a rom-com, which I guess is probably deliberate, but it just felt very out of place to me.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that's interesting is I thought going into it, just based on all the discourse that I've seen around the movie, I thought it was going to be like some sort of like sexual stalker, like a Fatal Attraction or something where,
yeah, that was the impression.
More
that I
sexual
got
between them, but they don't have a sexual relationship at all.
No.
But that's it's being hyped up as if they do, I guess just because it's like, whoa, these two guys have good chemistry. They must be gay, dude. Like, I don't know what it is, but it's really weird that and I think it goes back to this weird like gaze that's on these like certain type of male actors that are like young and fit and kind of fit the, you know, like the twink description or whatever, or kind of fit into
that category. Yeah, for sure. A very specific thing.
Yeah.
I mean, like some of that stuff they pulled off well in the movie, like when he's jerking off in the bathtub. I actually thought that scene was pretty effective, like the way that it was shot and kind of how they did it. It was, you know, a nice inversion of that trope, I suppose. But
yeah.
Ultimately, I mean, I guess, a lot of this movie can be summed up as why.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I guess maybe he was like at least bisexual because how he what he does to Farley, but also I think that was also just teasing him to like get what he wants. I think
that's much more about manipulation.
I think it was purely out of manipulation. Yeah, that which okay, so let's talk about,
which is fine, right? But
it's not commit clear. If you it's not entirely yeah. clear
because, you got to commit to it if that's what we're doing,
right. Because throughout the movie, I was always wondering whether his obsession with Felix was, if it was romantic or if it was purely out of like an adoration for what he has, if he just wanted to be him that badly. And you never really know. I mean, he fucks his grave at the end, but again, it's like, is he fucking him out of a romantic feeling, or is he fucking him out of like, I've literally fucked you and now I'm fucking, you know, like,
yeah. I mean, and I'm fine with ambiguity or with it being both, but then when you get to the end of the movie and he has this whole monologue with the mom on the respirator, it seems just like he did it just to get their wealth and that's it. So then again, it's like, well, then why did he do all of this other stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, whatever,
but you know, obviously committing to letting the bad guy win is nice, I suppose.
Yeah, it's fine. Well, it depends. I mean, if he's not the Minotaur, he's the hero, you know. The rich family are the evil ones,
are they? I mean, they're clearly supposed to be, but like, they're like fine. I mean, they're again shitty people, but they're not evil. Like, they're just
that's the other thing is guys. Like, yeah, they're just, they're really not that bad. It's like, yeah, they're sort of vapid, but they're also just so wealthy that they're out of touch with other classes. Yeah. They're not like looking down on other classes per se. One thing that was interesting though was,
like in a particularly malicious way. Like they're not evil. Like they're not these mustache twirling. They're just detached rich people.
Well, that's evil enough, dude. There's no good billionaires.
I know. It doesn't work.
One thing I thought was interesting was how they play with this idea of like rich people and poor people might do the same things, but it's looked down on when a poor person does it. But it's sort of like classy if a rich person does it, you know, like an eating disorder. You know, you might look down on someone with an eating disorder who's a lower class, but it's also kind of like posh or something if you're rich, or it's like fetishized, or, you know, and on also like gossiping and drinking and partying, things like that. I don't know. That's kind of, it's not really explored. It's just kind of there. It's like, okay, that's something to think about, that, you know, the movie's not really doing much besides just showing it, but okay, it's an interesting idea. Yeah,
and there, you know, there are things too where it's like they kind of commit to the idea of like the house being a maze, again going to like the Minotaur thing, but they don't really do anything with that. There's the like head butler guy who's this like specter of the house that's constantly skulking around, and they don't do anything with that.
I think he's just supposed to be there. I think he's just kind of represents, like,
he gets an odd amount of focus, like just enough in the movie where I'm like, is this supposed to be something? Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I didn't think too much about him. I just thought he was supposed to just be like, you know, a very buttoned up butler that doesn't really have a personality outside of I'm a buttoned up, you know, butler type of guy.
Yeah.
Which would be pretty off-putting and hard to sort of, you know, relate to if you're not from that class of people that is used to having.
Yeah, for sure. Which again, it's like, would be much more interesting if Barry Keoghan's character were at least at first genuine. Like, I'd be fine with him being a killer if like he becomes one after assimilating into their life or something. But the fact that he like, it was like cold and calculated, just like, doesn't really make any sense.
I also would have been more okay with it if they hinted that he sabotaged the bike. If they just sort of planted that from the beginning, like, wait, did he do that? So you're
we have no reason to think that would have happened.
Right.
They never set anything, any of that up.
I mean, they show signs of him manipulating people, like from when he gets there. But that doesn't really help you form any conclusions about him other than, okay, he has some sort of ulterior motive for, you know, fucking with these people, but you don't know what it is. And whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I took it as him just like being desperate to assimilate into this world and to do it by any means necessary, which is interesting enough. I think there's plenty you can do with that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of films, Robbie, about classism and racism that are set in an oddly specific year for no other discernible reason other than it's a cool year and provides a kick-ass soundtrack, and it's about a sort of troubled youth at a very rich school not being able to get along with his very rich classmates, and he's sort of stuck with a surrogate family when he's left behind on a holiday. Speaking of that, I also watched The Holdovers.
I unfortunately was not able to before.
Oh, recorded, so okay.
You're gonna have to handle this one. I was very, very sad about that because
I won't spoil it too much. It's weird how similar these movies were. They both start with fucking outdated studio titles for some reason, and have like old timey opening titles, and are set in the past and in Saltburn, it's Oxford. In The Holdovers, it's a prep school. But, you know, these very large historic schools that uber wealthy kids attend. Yeah, weird similarities, and also just dealing with class and all that. But yeah, The Holdovers is a very lovely, at times gut wrenching film about these people called holdovers, which is when the school dismisses for Christmas break people that don't have anywhere else to go, like their families can't come get them or whatever. They stay behind at the school, and then there'll be a teacher that stays behind to chaperone. And then the head cook will stay behind as well. And Paul Giamatti is a very hated by both students and faculty teacher that gets sort of forced into being the teacher that stays behind. And then we have a group of kids that stay behind, including our main character, who's really fucking terrible, shitty mom, abandons him for Christmas to go on a impromptu makeup honeymoon with her latest husband. And something really funny happens where all the other kids get to leave, and he's trying to get permission from his mom to leave as well, because obviously Paul Giamatti's character is fucking horrible with kids and just like absolutely horrible to be around. And they can't get a hold of his mom, so he can't get permission, and he's stuck to stay there. And over the course of the break, him and Paul Giamatti's character and the cook, they sort of sneak off campus and get into these, you know, wacky adventures. And
Sure.
It's just great. It was really great. But one of the things about the film is it also gets pretty real, dealing with like mental health issues. And also the cook character, her son had just died in Vietnam, and this is her first Christmas without him. And so there's a lot of dealing with the grieving of that. And it just, I mean, all three performances are fucking incredible, top notch. The writing's really good. It's directed by Alexander Payne, who did Sideways, which is one of my favorite comedies. It's just sharp as fuck, hilarious. And like I said, really heartwarming and, you know, kind of bittersweet at times. And yeah, it's kind of like, it's kind of like a, like Saltburn meets like a Dead Poet Society or something. Pretty interesting, but yeah,
interesting.
Great film. It's on Peacock right now. In fact, it was the highest, my highest rated film of 2023.
Wow.
Yeah. I enjoyed
about that.
What's funny is I watched it. I watched it after the new year and rated it. Also, it's a Christmas movie, so I'll be revisiting it next Christmas. Yeah, I'm very excited.
As you should.
But I didn't watch it in time for my 2023 Letterboxd Wrapped to come out. and I don't have it handy. My most watched actor was Gene Hackman, which doesn't sound real. I was like, there's no fucking way it was Gene.
How the fuck? That's awesome.
Like, well, I guess four Superman movies and fucking French Connection, I guess. But it's like, I also watched maybe like several Roy Scheider films, and I watched Sorcerer like four times this year. So I don't know, but I didn't log every time. So whatever.
Well, that's going to skew.
What's funny is it shows you your three highest rated films of that year, like the ones that came out that year, and my three highest rated films of 2023 all only had 3 stars out of 5. And it was John Wick. It was basically just like movies I saw that I remembered to log. It was like nothing special about any of them. It's just that I didn't really give a fuck about movies, like new releases last year, I guess. But yeah, I was like John Wick 4, okay, it's fine, 3 stars. And then Mr. Monk's Last Case. I was like, yeah, fine, 3 stars. And then something else, I don't even know what the fuck it was, but yeah, my last watched film of the year was Mr. Monk's Last Case.
Nice.
How fitting.
Indeed.
Yeah, good times. Really good times. And I also watched, it was like, celebrate this, and it shows that I watched Little Shop of Horrors on September 11th.
What a way to ring in that holiday.
Yeah. It seemed appropriate. It's set in New York, right? It's the end of the world. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Good times. Robbie, you didn't have a chance to watch The Holdovers. Did you have a chance to watch Joe Coy's opening monologue for the Golden Globes the other night?
Oh, Jesus, no. I didn't even know he was hosting.
Neither did he, apparently. wow. So this is what I meant when I said this whole episode is about cringe content.
Excellent.
Wow, dude, there's he comes out and he's going on and on. He can't go 5 minutes without talking about how his mom's Filipino. It's his entire
that's his shtick. That is his whole thing. I'm my mom is Filipino and I do impressions of her. Isn't that wacky?
I mean, how this guy's been in the game for like 20 plus years and he's all he has is that his mom's Filipino. That's it. I remember he had a show a year or two ago. I don't know what it was called. Who fucking cares? It was about his family. But the entire, like, the big punchline of the trailer was he gets pulled over and then his mom says something in, like, broken English. And then he corrects her and he does this, like, mom, you know, face at the camera. It's like, dude, we know. You've been talking about this shit for fucking 25 years now, dude. Do like literally say anything else. I'm tired of hearing about your fucking mom. Jesus Christ. So anyways, he comes out talking about his Filipino mom, how she loves Meryl Streep. And then he gets into the quote unquote jokes. They're really, really bad. And he also just looks really uncomfortable. Like he's never been on a stage that big. You know,
like I have, which is odd because isn't he like he's like a stadium comedian, isn't he? Isn't he one of those?
Yeah.
Oh man, yeah. I mean, I guess there's not enough money in the world to make Ricky Gervais do it anymore. But Ojukwe is an odd choice. I didn't know that it was him. I saw.
Well, he was a replacement thing for somebody.
I see. Okay, I saw a thing about it earlier, and I was like, he's an odd choice for that.
Yeah, I mean, how far down on the list was that guy?
Yeah, for real.
I mean, was
well, Dane sure. Cook, yeah, if it's a last minute thing, then Dane Cook probably would have been better than that.
No, you're not wrong because he's just so fucking awkward, and he'll just repeat the same thing over and over again, and then so he starts trying to make jokes, and just none of it was good, and so he starts bombing really bad, and someone's booing him, and then he goes, just so you know, I didn't write these jokes, so he just throws all the writers under the bus. And then later he says, I did write that joke that you're laughing at. He got like one laugh in the 11 minute monologue. And he says, that's the joke that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sure, bud. Well, no one was laughing at the jokes about your Filipino mom. I'm sure that the writers didn't come up with that one. So he's going on and on. Then he starts talking about Oppenheimer and Barbie. And he's like, he makes a joke about how long Oppenheimer is. It's like, okay, yeah, that's duh. You know, the obvious joke is about the length. Yes. But then he just keeps talking about it, and he's like, I look forward to finishing it in 2024. Yeesh. And then he just keeps going. He's like, it's so long, and just really dragging it out. And he goes, yeah, Barbie and Oppenheimer are both nominated for Best Picture. He goes, Oppenheimer is based on a 700 page Pulitzer Prize winning book. Barbie's based on a plastic doll with big boobies. And then you just hear audible groans. And then I have a picture. I meant to send it to you. It's from behind him. It's literally during this joke. And so it's behind him. Yeah. You see the crowd. And Selena Gomez has her head in her hands. Harrison Ford is in the middle of rolling his eyes. And like everybody just looks fucking fed up. And this is like 5 minutes into the fucking show, dude. It is brutal. And he just keeps going. And then he starts, and he's like, where's Barry Keoghan? Is Barry Keoghan here? And then he just starts talking about his penis for another 5 minutes. It's like, dude, this is not fucking cool. It's like,
yeah.
Just leave the man alone.
Yikes. Yikes.
You
leave Barry Keoghan alone.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I swear he says something like, your penis is almost as long as Oppenheimer. And it's just like, oh my god, dude. Just fucking stop.
So you're a slide whistle.
Yeah, it was really bad. You gotta watch it. That's man. Brutal. It's funny. Yeah. Just brutal. Not good. Not good.
Not good, okay.
Nah, it was not good, okay. It didn't send their best, okay. I guess that's one thing I got to incorporate into the Trump is the little.
Oh yeah. It's the little tight inhale.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really funny. I was watching.
Yeah.
A video.
I do like his like through the teeth inhales too. He's.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They weren't sending their best to the Golden Globes the other night. That I can tell you. It's like, do you really need to breathe that badly right now?
Well, yeah, it's labored. Have you seen how much stomach he has to move out of the way?
Oh my god, dude, he looks like a fucking ghoul. I wish he would just fucking.
He really does. Right? Like you know, I get that it's you know making fun of Trump's appearance or whatever is played up, but he's really like, it's the stress is getting to him, and you can really really see it on his face now.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's making him go out there. Fucking orange dye running down his face, eyes swollen shut, sweating through his fucking whatever the fuck he wears under that suit that keeps everything together.
Spanx.
It's a lot of Spanx, dude. It's many.
Yeah,
well,
they help hold
Spanx.
In. Yeah, many Spanx, the best yeah. Spanx, and it's helpful too because it helps hold in the colostomy bag.
Oh, of course, of course. Yeah,
and the catheter.
Oof. First president to have a catheter, okay?
Pardon me.
Well, Robbie, the Jeffrey Epstein list dropped. So did another
Green
Day song.
Which is worse? You which decide. Is worse.
We're here to debate that right fucking now.
Which is worse, and why is it Green Day?
Oh my god, it's so bad. Okay, so Green Day dropped a new song. I'm gonna play the beginning of it real quick for the listeners
here. This is nobody definitely is shit. Yeah, not at all. We need absolute silence so you can bask in the glory of this amazing riff. I think you're gonna have to put that in a post. I couldn't hear it at all, but that's fine.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, a little bit, but not much, but that's fine.
That's fine. That's totally fine. Yeah, so this song is just fucking lazy and really bad. And it starts off, it like rips off of So What by Pink. That's pretty embarrassing.
Yep.
Yeah, and then the chorus is just Holiday. Remember when you guys did this 20 years ago?
Yeah, it's not great.
With a little bit of 8675309 thrown in there for good measure.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Well, the vocal melody.
It really feels like a cover band of dads decided to write their own song.
Yeah, and it's full of, this is what I want to do, Robbie. Before they drop, I think they're going to drop one more single and then the album comes out. But even if it just goes straight to the album, we can still do this. I want to make a Green Day bingo card. Featuring all the classics.
Yes, yes.
Featuring I'm here for it. Billy Joe screaming "Say," he loves to do that.
Yep.
The little on the guitar frets, he loves to do one of those.
Yep.
Between verses and choruses, a big old what's the other thing he does?
Mention of a noose. Yeah, Heyo is good. Mention of a noose.
Mm.
His heart combined with something violent.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we got to get some lyrical tropes in there. And then, he also loves to do a big.
That's more of a recent one.
Yeah, no, that's since American Idiot. He discovered that in Holiday, and he was like, I'm going to keep this one. I'm going to put it in every song from now on.
Yeah, he likes to talk about being fed up a lot now.
He's so
which
fed
I guess
up.
Is kind of always, yeah. I mean, and I guess that's kind of sort of always been around a little bit, but it's been an overdrive ever since American Idiot did so well.
Yeah. Yeah. He also just loves
religion bad.
What is
that'll be in there somewhere? Something like about religion being bad.
Mm.
That'll be in there probably.
It could be. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Or comparing a conservative thing to religion, that'll be in there.
Mm-hmm. He likes to use buzzwords like charlatan, saint.
Yeah, charlatan and saint are both very good ones.
I'm surprised there's not a fucking album called Charlatans and Saints.
Is there it's not? Coming. That sounds...
Maybe it's a song.
Maybe
I don't know.
Maybe there's a live album or something like that. Saints and Charlatans or Charlatans and Saints, whatever. Really, is that's the most Green Day title I've ever heard in my life. That has to be something. I'm going to look it up.
Oh, my God.
If not, that can be the name of our Green Day cover band.
Mm. Why do we want to do that? Oh, it's not a good time to be a Green Day fan, let me tell you.
No. I mean, some would argue that it never was, I think.
True.
I think that's maybe a little harsh. Oh, this is what it is. Charlatans and Saints was Act 2 of 21st Century Breakdown. That's what it was.
Lovely.
Yeah, remember when they were all in on the rock opera thing because it worked once? And then they were just like, we're literally going to do the exact same thing again, but worse.
It always works.
Nobody's ever
time if you do it worse. That's what I've found.
Yeah. Well, see, nobody's ever thought of that before.
Right.
That was their galaxy brain play.
Yeah. Another weird thing. Well, not weird. It tracks, actually. But another thing about this new batch of songs is how fucking overproduced they are.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of been a problem. I mean, some people thought that American Idiot was overproduced. I think
it's on the cusp.
It's on the cusp, but I think it's on the right side of it.
Yeah.
It is very produced and very polished, but I think it works for the sound on that album. Because sure. It still has like depth to it, you know?
Yeah.
Versus like fucking every other album has not been great. And I think it's been particularly bad since Uno, Dos, and Tre.
Yeah, I think that was the lowest point, but somehow it keeps getting lower.
I know. Well, yeah, I was so incredibly disappointed with Uno, Dos, and Tre. I thought surely there's nowhere else to go from here but up. Like, we've reached.
I present you the Revolution Radio.
Oh, no, no. Father of All, my friend.
True. Yeah.
Father of All is way worse than Revolution Radio.
Almost unlistenable.
Revolution Radio had like two songs that were okay, as I recall.
I don't recall, but I'm sure that.
Yeah. I remember when they came out and I remember listening to them and being like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I re-listened to it not on my phone. I listened to it through my sound system at home, my stereo. Mm-hmm. I re-listened to Dilemma, their previous single. I think that one's pretty good, I gotta say. I know you were pretty upset about it. Well, for one thing, you said it was like, how did you put it? You were like, oh, it's a bunch of old dudes pretending they're young again. It's like, it's about how he's an alcoholic. I feel like, you know, you're never too old to be an alcoholic.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously. No, it's just like in terms of the like sound, the style or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if Johnny Manchild just dropped that, you'd be pretty into it, I feel like. Or like Motion City.
I mean,
they're not really, you know.
I don't know about that. If Johnny Manchild dropped that song, I'd be like, I'd fucking text him and be like, dude, what the fuck?
It's fine. It's a fine song.
It's not as bad as the fucking one that we just heard, but it's still not great. Like, I don't think it's a good song, it's personally.
Probably their best song since anything on 21st Century Breakdown, which is not, again, it's a backhanded compliment.
Not a particularly high bar.
Although
I will go to bat for Last Night on Earth. I think that song is great.
Sure. I don't remember that song, but yeah, I'm sure it is.
It's the ballad. It's a good one.
I never got all the way through 21st Century Breakdown. I've never listened to it all the way through.
Yeah, that's fine.
I was out pretty early. I was out and I was on to listening to Pearl Jam's Backspacer, baby.
Hell yeah. Mid-career Pearl Jam.
Oh, fucking nothing Backspacer. Better. There's some weird tracks on that one.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah.
Good times. I could actually understand some of the lyrics on that album as well. That was nice.
Yeah, he started enunciating once we got into the 2000s.
Yeah. I actually, dude, I wanted to propose One-Eyed Bastard, the Green Day song we were just talking about. I really want to send that to Pat Finnerty and see if we can get it its own stinkers video. Or maybe even a What Makes the Song Stink.
I don't know if it would be enough for a What Makes the Song Stink necessarily. But it could be a good little stinker.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I think that's a good idea because he's allegedly gonna make some more content now that his back is doing better.
Yeah, I watched his last video. What was it? That stupid Jason Aldean song.
Yeah, try that in a small town.
Yeah. Oof.
Yeah, Pat Finnerty. If you don't watch his shit, check him out on YouTube. He fucking rules.
Yeah, I thought you were addressing Pat Finnerty like you would be listening to this
hey, podcast Pat, right now. Hey, yeah, Lee Michael, you can, if you need to do that, this is going to be just for me and Pat.
Oh, okay, I can, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Pat, it's your buddy, Robbie, your friend, your confidant, Some have said lover. I feel like that's maybe a bit strong. I don't know how Kim would feel about that, but you know, people talk. It is what it is. I think One Eyed Bastard would make a great little Stinkers. You know, I think it would serve you well. You want to make some more content this year. You want to get a little more into that YouTuber game. You're all about it. So this idea is for you, bud. This one's for you.
Sorry to interrupt you. Oh, that was sweet.
No, it's okay. Yeah, it's a little kiss. It's
a little kiss for Pat. Nice. All right.
Yeah, you know, it's a little something between friends, between guys, you know, pals.
Just bros being bros, a little sweet goodnight kiss.
Yeah.
It's not gay if they're your sweet prince, you know?
Exactly. Just as God intended. I want that on a t-shirt. It's not gay if they're your sweet prince.
Oh, man.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, so I had the same coworker I was talking to about Saltburn. We also have a band name list that's growing.
Excellent.
We were joking about No Doubt earlier, and she suggested a cover band called Undoubtedly. And I came back with Some Doubt, or There's Doubt.
or just
Yeah. Doubt.
Press X to
I'm
doubt.
Do that next time someone tells me an unbelievable story. I'm just gonna go doubt. Not even doubt, it just doubt. There's doubt.
I like it. And then immediately change the subject.
It's like a fucking I think you should leave sketch or something. Just walking around going, doubt. What? I'm sorry? Doubt. What are you saying? Doubt.
Doubt. And then leave.
Yeah. All right. Anyways, so the only thing nearly as bad as Green Day that we suffered through this week was the revelation that Jeffrey Epstein's private jet was wheelchair accessible. Because he had that boy Stephen Hawking on there.
I legitimately, one of the first questions I had when they said that Stephen Hawking was like a frequent flyer or whatever, I was like, how'd they get him on there? I mean, I'm sure that they have like stair lifts or whatever that will take him up, but yeah. Just like image of him just like being like carried up.
Yeah, fucking helicopter blades come out of the back of him, propel him up into the plane.
Like fucking Spy Kids.
Like some Inspector Gadget shit, dude.
Or he was carried up by his concubines.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. All the 13-year-old girls would make a big pile, and then they would kind of push him up the pile into the
and you know engine. I appreciate that they at least were all teenagers.
Oh my god. Yeah. It's not as bad if they're teenagers.
It's not as bad, and you can quote me on that.
I've always said it's not as bad.
I always have.
Yeah. Oof.
Yeah, so moved my computer there on accident. So yeah, what do you think of the revelations that all of these people that we already knew flew on the plane, it turns out flew on the plane? How do you feel about this bombshell? Well,
the reason
of information that we kind of already had.
Right. Well, the reason I wanted to talk about this specifically is because back during COVID, there was an incident that I still just haven't really I'm still grappling with it. Okay. So as you know, Tom Hanks and his lovely wife, what's her face? From Jingle All the Way. Rita Wilson? Rita Repulsa? I don't know.
Rita Repulsa.
Yes. It depends whether she's Colin or Chet's mom. on whether or not she's Rita Repulsa. But
which is which, you decide.
Yeah. So Tom Hanks and his wife were on vacation and they got COVID. They were like the first celebrities in the news to get COVID, and so therefore they couldn't leave. I think they were in Australia, which had very strict COVID laws even back
then. They were in like a bungalow at some resort or something.
Yeah, and somehow this got turned into a conspiracy theory that they were being held by like the Australian army because they were secretly running like a child sex ring and eating children. And
yes, it's always a pedophile ring.
Yeah. And so they were being held in an Australian prison and like they couldn't be extradited because their crimes were too severe. Like I forgot all the ins and outs of the conspiracy. For one thing, any fucking person that isn't fucking brain dead should be able to just think like, yeah, that doesn't sound right, you know, at all.
Yeah.
But say you have few brain cells and you buy it. You're like, okay, yeah, I could totally see how Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson travel the globe and have like international pedophile rings. And, you know, they had to go tend to the one down under, you know, they had to go throw another proverbial shrimp on the Barbie, aka a child into the fire pit ring. Whatever. Okay. Let's say that you're that person. And this whole time, you just, every time you see Tom Hanks somewhere, the most lovable celebrity who ever lived, you think, God, I fucking hate that pedophile. Fucking hate that pedophile. And then, you know, you find out the big list we've all been waiting for is coming out. That's going to have literally every person's name on it and tell you that they're a pedophile. And he's not on the list. What do? Do you say, oh, okay, well, I guess that was incorrect information. No, you double down. You say they're hiding the real list. This list is there to distract you. The reason Donald Trump's name is on the list, even though there's 10,000 photos of him and Jeffrey Epstein, and the fact that Donald Trump ran a fucking
AI generated.
Yeah, the fact that there's photos of them together at a teenage beauty pageant that Trump used to run, and it's documented that he would fucking walk in the dressing room unannounced, trying to see the girls fucking naked.
Objection, Your Honor. Circumstantial.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you can't think about it too much. It'll drive you crazy.
I don't really care that much about celebrities or celebrity in general, but it's fucking Tom Hanks. I thought we all agreed a long time ago that he's cool. We all love him. Who the fuck decided I fucking hate this guy and I'm going to fucking start a conspiracy theory that he's running an international pedophile ring?
No, yeah, he's a convenient high profile target at the beginning of a thing that started a bunch of conspiracy. Like he's a very easy target for that, I think. True. And he's in a foreign country, right? So he's like far away. It's distant. No, you can't nobody can get to him.
It's just fucking insane to me.
Yes.
It's just insane to me that the thing they've been advocating for the release of this whole time, it's like this is a fucking bipartisan, this is like a nonpartisan issue. It's like, okay, there's a list of people and these are the facts of how these people were not involved. Like being on this list doesn't mean you're a fucking pedophile and you're having sex with, you know, trafficked girls. Clearly Stephen Hawking wasn't. He fucking flew on the jet. He wasn't out there fucking, you know, the underground pedophile sex trafficking railroad. He wasn't leading the way like the front of the train. Okay.
I don't know. He could have been munching some box or something. You don't know.
I guess. Yeah. His little talk box was talking dirty.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, the thing that gets me about this list too, is that it's like, all it tells you is that some people flew on the plane and like, sure. Yeah. I suppose if they flew on it a lot, you might be able to extrapolate something from that. But at the end of the day, this really doesn't tell us anything except they happened to fly on the plane.
Right.
At some point. And right. It really does not give us anything.
Right. But I just love that this is what they've been waiting for this whole time, and it comes out and it says in black and white terms, I mean, it doesn't say like, you know, pedophile, not pedophile. It just says in black and white terms, these are people we know to have been on this plane with Jeffrey Epstein. You know, that's that. And they're still fucking disputing it. They're still saying, no, this is wrong. Or yes, it means that they're a fucking pedophile. It's like, it can't
yeah,
be both.
Yeah, that's the fun part. But it is, Michael, you see. That's part of the deep state's plan.
Oh, I know. I know the plan. I know the plan all too well. You know, it's just crazy. It's like, and then the other thing is like, Bill Clinton's on it. As if that's a guy. Like, if anybody cares about Bill Clinton, I mean, I don't even know any Democrats that really particularly give a fuck about Bill Clinton. It's like, whether
I do think especially for like the diehard Trumpers, they like can't they don't understand that we don't have that kind of allegiance for like the people in our party, right? Right. Even though like you and I are like, yeah, fuck him. Like, sure, if he fucked a kid, then fuck him.
Exactly.
Rotten hell. Who cares?
But what's so insane is just the mere mention of his name in this document to them means, okay, guilty. He did it. He's fucking kids. Guess who else is in the same list many times? Donald J. Trump. No, well, it doesn't mean he did anything. He just flew on the plane. Mm-hmm. Why? He has his own planes, you fuck. Why would he need to be on Jeffrey Epstein's plane when he has his own planes? It's just the breaking point of like, I'm so fucking tired of the bending backwards over like fallacies to bend reality into what the fuck you want it to be. I can't fucking.
Yeah, it's a big reason of why I've like completely disconnected from news. I hardly consume any of it anymore. I just can't fucking do it anymore. It drives me fucking crazy.
Yeah. 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 It's cool. It's fun stuff. Fun stuff. Fun stuff. Robbie, real quick, while I'm all wound up, I want to mention something here that's fucking pissing me
ahead,
off.
Please
all
do.
Right, so
please
got
do.
I got a couple 4K Blu-rays recently. And one of them was I picked up Blade Runner, the original Blade Runner here. The final cut, Blade Runner final cut.
Yes. Yes.
Now, 4K Ultra HD. Now, when I got this package or when I got this box here, I initially thought, okay, it'll be one disc. It'll be the 4K copy of Blade Runner, the final cut. That's fine with me. I don't care. I've got the 5-disc Blu-ray of every cut ever made. I don't care. I only need the 4K of the real thing. Well, I open it and I see, oh, there's actually multiple discs in here. That's nice. I didn't know that. So here we have this disc that says Blade Runner, the final cut, 4K Ultra HD. This is the disc. Okay. So I'm like, excellent. Okay, well, what else is in here? I pop it out and then I see this disc that says it's the Blu-ray of the final cut. It says disc one. Okay. So starting with this disc, this is disc one. Let's look at these other discs that are numbered. Here's disc two, Blade Runner, Dangerous Days, The Making of Featurette. Okay, that's a great documentary.
Okay, sure.
And then here's disc four, archive stuff. So I'm thinking, where the fuck is disc three? It can't be the 4K because why would that be in between a making of documentary and archival footage?
Yeah, why would that not be one?
Yeah, I'm thinking there must be another Blu-ray, especially because the Blu-ray has 5 discs and it's all the same discs as what this is. There's a disc in the Blu-ray that's disc three or whatever, or four, whatever's missing from here. And it's all the other cuts of the film. So I'm thinking I'm missing a disc, especially since there's kind of space for another disc in this little thing. So I'm like, what the fuck? Nope. That's how they fucking packaged this shit. They had a disc not numbered, and then they numbered all the other discs, and they didn't number them fucking numerically in the right order. They skipped disc three. Why would you not just put disc one, two, and three? Why would you put 1, 2, 4, you stupid fucking assholes? I gotta live with this shit now, you fucking piece of shit.
Oh, what a delightfully specific problem for like just to piss you off.
I hate that so much. Just label it 1, 2, 3. Why would you put 1, 2, 4? Like, who fucked up when they were counting on their fingers? Oh my God. This is unforgivable to me. I hate this so much. This
been some Terrence Howard math over there.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. I didn't know Terrence Howard fucking restored movies at Warner Brothers. This is horseshit, dude. And it would have been fine, I guess, if it at least said disc three on the 4K. It would still be dumb, but I'd be like, okay. But no, that's not how you fucking count things, you stupid fucks.
Hell yeah. 1, 2, 4.
Fucking Warner Brothers. God damn it. Oh, that pisses me the fuck off. I mean, why would you do that? So dumb. So dumb. So yeah, I've been just dealing with that. the past couple days. Just like,
how have you been able to function?
I'm not coping well. It's pissing me off, dude. Like, why would you do it like that? I don't understand. Like, do you not respect the fucking consumer at all? At all? Like,
no, obviously not. Obviously, Jesus, they already have your money, so fuck you.
What a middle finger, dude. What a petty middle finger.
Thanks for your fucking money, you piece of shit.
Yeah, get fucked. Get fucked.
You dumb asshole. Here's your fucking Blu-rays, you cunt.
Yep, that's how it feels. I feel like I feel like they just spat in my face and then slapped me.
In your mouth, perhaps?
And then they turned me around and they threw me out the fucking like glass doors at the Warner Brothers entrance. And then I got hit by a car.
Spank on the ass. Yeah.
Yeah. A little spank on the ass, a wedgie, and then thrown through plate glass. That's how I feel. With fucking someone else's saliva all over my face. It's not good. It's not a good feeling.
Thank you, Warner Brothers. Very cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm pretty exhausted from that.
You and me both.
Yeah, I gotta go real quick and look at my Blu-ray copy that has all the discs numbered correctly, just to kind
of, you know, to ground yourself.
Yeah, to ground myself. Absolutely. Absolutely. Robbie, thanks for joining me. By the way, spoilers for Saltburn.
Full spoilers for Saltburn. Full spoilers.
Thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, Robbie, for joining me. If you like this, you want to hear more, we might have more. I don't know. We're on a new podcasting platform, and we get 2 hours a month, baby. So we'll see.
Well into that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's it. All right.